good spell. With John and Mary on a good spell. The top banana, and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go on, give them a tweet. The DS106 good spell show.
I think now we are live for the DS106 good spell. Obviously futzing splendidly since 2013 on DS106 Radio for Life. This is one of 106 bullets. Mantras and Cones explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me, as usual, is Mariana Finnis. Good evening, Mariana.
Hello, John. Good evening. How are you?
I'm well, yeah. I got the usual feel on switching applications and the like to start the show, which is always good. I always wonder if there's people listening who miss all this because they listen to the podcast.
This is the best part. Yeah, waxing at the beginning.
We're on week two of our summer. I'm saying summer in some sort of trepidation because it's been raining steadily here all day. Yesterday I was walking in the hills near Glasgow, and I wasn't even very high up. I was about 600 metres, and in places there was a foot of snow. I was bitterly cold wind. So happy May, and this is the May holiday weekend, and we're in bullet number two of the summer term, which is why I started talking about summer, which is starting to believe that it's possible to ignore the potential bad stuff and use the web for open education. And this is something I mean, starting that this is obviously a while ago you're referring to, Mariana, because you're pretty much open and online now.
It was lovely to find it, because I hadn't, as with a number of these, you don't have the, it's a while now, so, you know, you read something and you think, gosh, yes, I remember. This is the wonderful thing about having your archive online, that you can actually go and revisit how you thought and how you were, well, in this case, you know, a year ago, but actually this bullet really refers to nearly 2 years, because I was looking to some of the things that it referred to, and it's nearly 2 years, well, it'll be 2 years in June that I had my first conversation with anybody in the S106 before I even started to think about doing it. So that's quite it was quite an interesting one today. It's more of a personal thing.
Yeah, it's a bit of a landmark. It's hard to believe that it's only such a short time. If you think how much you produced in that time and moving yourself into DS106 by over, you know, running the Daily Create for the past few months and things like that. It doesn't seem that long ago then that you started. You refer to in the notes about having unpleasant experiences or bad experiences online before DS106. Mm. And I don't know if you want to, if they're comfortable to talk about even, or.
Like we could do a little bit on that, just to compare and contrast. Yeah. I suppose I just started to do some work in what they call the walled garden, don't they? Mm. The learning management system, and we probably don't need to say much more than that in the context of what we're doing. I was doing something that had to do with innovation in distance education. And I was having to do all of that behind the walled garden of the LMS in what I would call very, very traditional ways of teaching, not to say archaic and old-fashioned.
We won't say that then.
And so I just it was a very interesting thing in a way, because you're doing something in a traditional university, in a traditional way, and you learn about this thing that is called a MOOC, and that is called a, you know, specifically in the context of as I teach, it was interesting to me to see whether this was something that I could use in my teaching. Mm. And I was about to give it up and go, no, this is just, I'm not going to do this. And then I came across the S106 and decided to drop the bad stuff and try it.
Yeah.
Learn about it by doing it. So the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah. And you've kind of introduced yourself. I don't know if this is an introduction, but I've just been rereading the post that you wrote back in June in 2013, Can Digital Storytelling Provide an Effective Educational Tool? And you started with a bit of a bang. It's a pretty big post with a lot of things in it. Yeah.
Well, I worked. What it was, you see, that was that we had an assignment, you know, in the sort of traditional way, inside the LMS. We had an assignment, and in the assignment, I wasn't allowed to do any of these things. I had to write a Word document.
Mm-hmm.
And I was horrified. I was absolutely horrified that I would have to be jumping through this kind of hoop when actually what I'm trying to do is to learn about this stuff that's out there. And that's how this started. In fact, what this is my kind of version of what I would have liked to have done for my assignment, which is why it has so much stuff, because I've been researching it for quite a few weeks and I've been doing quite a lot of learning for myself around it. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's a long, long post that really was about what is a story and when you put the digital in there, what is, you know, a digital story, and can a digital story be used in the context of education. Because at the time I didn't know very much, so, you know, it's kind of a stupid question. It's like, what is it, Kat?
Yeah, so there's an easy way to answer that with yes, but it's probably worth going through the procedures you did. And one of my favourite ones in the examples you give is, just before talking about something which is, I would say, very seriously taken, which is Ernest Hemingway's six-word stories, you've got a sort of meme type. It's not a cat one. It's a dog meme image. It's just an image with a big bunch of blocky text. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 words on it. And to me, this is the interesting thing, is that, you know, a story can be just that. It can just be a picture. It can just be something else. And one of the things I think digital storytelling has maybe let us do is be a lot more playful with what we call a story.
Mm-hmm. That little thing that you referred to, that little image, I thought at the time, again, because it wasn't something that I was very involved in, I did not know about memes. I didn't, you know, there's many things I didn't really know. But I found this must have been on Google Plus somewhere, and what I thought was really interesting about it and why I picked it was because. Precisely because of that, because here is, you know, just, and most memes are like that, aren't they? Mm-hmm. They kind of, it's an image that means.
And you feel that, there is the idea of a story with a start and a middle and an end and all the rest of it, but we've kind of got some stuff that is wider than that, and it seems to be easier to talk about that in the digital than it maybe is in, and I might be wrong, than it is in written storytelling or oral storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a big resurgence certainly in the last, I was going to say a few years, but it's probably 2 decades by now, in oral storytelling and education and other spheres. Mm-hmm. Certainly in Scotland, we used to get storytellers of various forms, some traditional and some much less so, coming in.
Well, it's a very interesting thing, which I think, because I've been interested in storytelling, in traditional storytelling for education for a long time, and I used to, you know, teach it and, you know, help people learn how to tell stories without the digital part. But the digital part, I think, does allow for something. Let's say not more or less, because that way then you evaluate, don't you? Let's just say different. It allows for something different, like the kind of quick story that a meme can be.
Yeah.
Or the kind of quick story that, I mean, when I first came across the six-word stories, I mean, to me, there's something, something I heard somebody say about sometimes, you know, when people use Twitter well, it's like they're crafting something on a grain of sand, you know, that kind of idea. And there is something really beautiful about that, isn't there? That the more traditional way of thinking about telling stories doesn't really allow in the same way. It's different. It's a different kind of experience, I think.
I wonder if it hurts. I mean, a thing I've occasionally been involved in on Twitter is bumping haiku back and forwards. You know, just somebody will start and write one, and then somebody else responds, and you have a wee shot, and then it comes back and forwards. And it's easy to fit haiku in 140 characters, then it'd be hard to fill one up, it seems. You know, and that is a sort of very traditional form, I believe. It's the sort of thing in at a point in Japan, poets would sit around and sort of riff off haiku. So maybe the short form, or maybe in our society, it's jokes. You know, a very short joke.
Yes.
And it is a story. So,
in the context of, I guess, thinking about telling, not digital, but in a kind of oral thing, the sort of oral tradition, I suppose that would be, wouldn't it? And is a joke a story? I'd say most definitely.
Yeah, and sometimes it will rely, in the same way as your meme, it will rely on people's knowledge. It will rely on their shared vocabulary and things like that. In the same way that web stuff can very often do that.
Yeah, exactly. The whole thing about my exploration about digital storytelling as an educational tool was really me starting to learn about all of the things that could be possible working openly online. Because none of this stuff I actually learned by working, you know, in a traditional setting. It was more that I found out about VS106. I researched VS106, and I just tried some of these things, and thought, well, you know, this could be really interesting. I could see how, you know, this could be useful, helpful.
What you've seen, and that's the kind of story, and you can do it digitally as well. And sometimes digitally is. Has affordances and things that we don't have in just talking.
Yeah, exactly. And anyway, so the thing that happened with that post, because that was the sort of start really of it, was that I cannot to this day, I never asked him. Alan somehow found it, must have been through some his kind of RSS things, funding some stuff that's to do with VS106, I imagine. Anyway, so I put this thing up there, and I woke up one morning and I found this, you know, this thing from him, and I thought it was just lovely to have a comment from him. Of course, that's because at the time, and, you know, I didn't know many people, and I didn't know what, you know, what could be possible. What I thought was really interesting about the post, the comment, because that was the sort of first, you know, my first contact, was that it was a great example of, you know, what we've talked about before, what makes, you know, good. Also, of course, the fact that, you know, he took the time to read it and make a comment. And it was in that comment where he then said, well, I hope that I see you on DS106.
Yeah, and I think that's very often the things you start to learn are just the practical tools, like making things public, like you know, the way that you do bits and pieces, which are almost they're not the important thing, but they are vital. It's like grammar and punctuation almost of if you're writing these bits and pieces and like that. Yeah, I'm just watching the beach ball again. I'm having a wee bit of trouble here keeping my computer going.
Shall I keep everyone interested?
I was just going to say that Rochelle's tweeted a wee link to how she used digital storytelling in a corporate environment, which I think is interesting because you came out of not a corporate but a closed environment into the open, and Rochelle in some ways has taken the open back into a closed environment.
I have so far failed to get anybody interested in what I do out in the open.
There's interest in the minute. Obviously, I think this is great. I've just about finished at work a basis that have produced, I think, 500 posts over the 10 weeks. And it's the first time I've had a chance. I've been desperate to do this for ages, and it's the first time I've had the chance to actually take it somewhere else. You know, we're not doing storytelling, we're actually just learning about the tools to do it. We've done some storytelling along the way and some other things, but we're just getting people to learn how to use the tools. And it's, you can take this into all sorts of environments, you know. And I say my main interest in education is at the primary sort of level. And I think it's kind of worked quite well. And I've been quite surprised how, you know, I haven't had to talk much about the openness, but people have kind of just gone and accepted that because we've said, well, it won't work if you're not open because we can't aggregate your stuff. And it's just been very nice. But
well, I think this is something that is it storytelling? Is it not storytelling? I don't know. I'm not very precious about that. I would say that, you know, one of the very practical things, and I think this is the way that, you know, because I've worked with Rochelle on the work that she's doing in the kind of corporate setting. You know, the thing that we sell internally is that it gives you the digital literacies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it may not be the main aim of it, because actually the main aim might be about learning to tell stories, craft stories, and work on work on the shape of your stories. That's part of it, but also the part of it is the whole digital literacy stuff that it gives you. And I would say, I mean, for the thing that fascinated me from the start was the idea. We have a chunk, don't we, on the open course, all of the rounds of the S106, we have this telling stories on the web. This sort of, you know, kind of, you know, using X-ray goggles and, you know, creating things, create a website, create a character, all of these things that basically mean that you have to use the digital medium in order to read the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If that isn't something that teaches you how to use it for quotes for real as well, you know, what does really? Because we learn, well, just about everything there is to learn in that particular week, in that particular module, just about everything there is to learn to be able to use the web in this kind of way. And you can use it for telling a story, but you could use the same digital literacies that you develop in the kind of way that you're talking about for educational purposes, for developing your own digital identity, etc., which is what makes it so powerful that it works at so many levels, I would say.
Certainly.
And I guess the beginning of that for me, which, you know, to sort of connect it back to this bullet today, the beginning of that for me was I had always said that I would never use Twitter, that this was not something that I ever wanted to get involved in, because I like more words than rather than less, if I can possibly have them. And I had all sorts of judgments about it. And yet I thought, okay, if I want to do the S106, clearly this is something that needs to happen. So I learned how to use it. And to me, you know, and I went, the detail of that doesn't matter, because I did a course to learn how to use it, and an open course at that, before I started the S106. But again, the nicest thing of that was that I learned to use Storify for the first time. And the thing that always stayed in my mind about that was, again, the kind of interactions that you have with people. That, you know, is that a story? I think it is a story, you know, particularly when you create a Storify with all the different tweets that you get from people and how they sort of shape something, don't they? You know, I talked to so-and-so and this happened. All the stories that Alan likes to have around the sort of, you know, the sharing stories of open. To me, they are stories. They are not stories in the traditional sense. But something is being woven. I don't know.
Certainly. And I was looking at the life of a tweet Storify, which I believe must have been 2 years ago that you produced that. And very often when I've used Storify, what I do is grab a big bunch of tweets, sort them into a chronological order, and click save. But what you've done there is that you've... linked up, you've got an image that works very well because of the dog, and you've got a really good picture of Colin and stuff, and in between the tweets you've explained things. And that,
yes,
you know,
I suppose I tell the story, don't I?
Yeah, so that's the storytelling bit, I guess, or that's one aspect of the storytelling, is you've grabbed the evidence, and the evidence might be a series of tweets or a bunch of photographs or a bit of movie or whatever, and you've started to put that into a story by providing linking and all sorts of stuff and sense and meaning round about it.
Which of course is kind of what you learn on the S106 when you start to think about the kind of, well, how do these things get woven in the context of that? Well, you know, there has to be a kind of narrative. You have to, you know, and yes, I know that we often use Storify just for as a kind of storage thing, but it can also be used in this kind of way, you know, just tell a story about something. Yeah, it's just and that particular thing was a really interesting story, because as I say, I had serious reservations about, you know, using Twitter at all, and now look at me, you can't get me off it. And Rochelle is saying that she also thought, what did she say? She said she didn't want to use it either when she started the S106, and she was surprised to learn how intimacy built quickly with it. And the nice thing, I mean, talking about stories and shaping stories, and I don't have the link, but I read about it a while back, this person that used Twitter to create a whole story, and he used it with using different accounts. And so she did it was because he couldn't create as many accounts as he needed to tell the story, so he asked his mates to give him access to accounts on Twitter that perhaps they didn't use, so then he could edit them. And he kind of created this whole thing where that was basically told. I wish we could find it, because it might be a nice link for people. I'll think about where I read it. He did it by tweeting back and forth. So you would tweet here, you would tweet there, and the tweeting basically tells the story.
Yeah.
Which I think is just a wonderful way of using the tool.
Really clever, yeah. And I've seen quite a few people who either tweet you know, a whole novel, or, you know, they take chunks out of it, or the history of, I've seen people do World War II, I think, you know, in sort of, in time, you know, what they do is jump forward a number of years, but they take events from things in the past and put a story together that way. I mean, it seems to be all sorts of, you're saying that you first didn't like it because of the limit on how much you can write, but just with, I suppose, any kind of tool, sometimes the limitations are the things that can make it interesting.
It's like the you know, that Ziga tool that basically allowed you to do a kind of, you know, mashup remix of images, videos, etc. And it has now died, and a number of people really liked it because they liked the tool. They liked the tool for exactly that, because it allowed you to easily kind of weave, you know, weave a story. And I've been looking for alternatives to it. And it's fascinating how we almost learn to think in the tool that we use.
Yeah.
Because I've come across all sorts of tools that actually allow you to do, quote, similar things, but they are not Ziga.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I would feel the same with Twitter, you know, if Twitter went tomorrow, or if Storyfy went tomorrow, because I think that we do somehow, it's this thing of, you know, we make the tools, we shape the tools, and then in turn they shape us, they shape our mind, they shape how we think. And so then the thing gets lost, because of course of the ephemeral nature of the web and all the tools, the free tools in particular, the thing gets lost, and you're like, God, I can't do it now.
Yeah. I wonder then, I mean, recently I've been trying out a few new things for putting words and pictures together, Sway and Adobe Slate and Medium and things like that, that produce something that's very polished. And you can see why folk use them. But I think there's maybe it's probably too hard to drag it out to your point about, you know, losing tools and what the tool gives you, and it's like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something between the way the tools do that, but the heart of the story that you've got. You know, and do we lose that if we use too slick a tool?
I know, I've been grappling with this, in fact, because of this thing of the you know, the kind of the not having access to the tool, and you grapple with this thing, and you do have certain people, certainly within the S106, that would argue that, you know, unless that you've got your shape of your story and you've got all of that in place, that actually if you have that, then you could tell it anywhere. I see that, I understand that from the perspective of traditional storytelling. Absolutely, I get that. But I also do think that it is a reciprocal causation type thing. I do think that certain tools and certain things do also feed into how you might tell the story, what you might want to say, how it gets shaped. And if you use a tool enough, you start to think in that way. So you start to tell the story so that it's suitable for that particular tool. And that, you know, it's I think, I don't know, you know, I don't think there is an answer. I think it is one of those things that we explore, you know, the kind of the place, the edge between the tools that we use. I mean, I really liked the thing that you've been doing, which is that you are telling the same story in all these different platforms to see what the differences are, and I suppose you're seeing how you interact with it in relation to the story that you're telling, whilst the story stays constant.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be an interesting thing if you, once you finish your experiment, if you do write a post on that experience, because I think it's an interesting experiment to say, you know, does it affect how the story is told, the fact that you are using different tools for the telling of the same story? It's an interesting question.
And just as you're saying that, I'm wondering, are the tools almost like, you know, poetic forms, for instance? You know, is Twitter a haiku and, you know, iMovie an epic poem or something? If it's not very polished, obviously, if it just came to me. But, you know, are these different things, different sorts of, you know, is that the same? Is it the same sort of experience as trying to tell, you know, to put your words into a particular form? You know, are some things novels and some things short stories and some things cinquain or whatever?
So then I suppose, yeah, that's right. It's like what form does the story fits the story best, and you, and that's a nice connection, that's a nice association. So you're saying what form fits the story best, and in the way that we might decide we write a poem or we write an essay, as a writer you might also then make decisions about what tool you choose that fits or suits the story best, rather than think about how do I kind of force it. In fact, we're going around the full circle, force it into the tool, which is in a way what I think would be the learning management system forces us to do when we're teaching, when we're using these things for educational purposes. The learning management system certainly forces us to tell our story for our course, for what we're teaching, to tell it in a particular way, i.e. the way it's designed. What the open web affords is any tool, and then you pick the one that you think would be most suitable for the form that you that suits the story best. That's nice. I see that.
Yeah.
I think you should write a post about that.
Well, I've got a few posts, unfortunately, piled up about all sorts of things at the moment. Once you get interested in stuff, it just goes on forever, doesn't it? It really does. I don't know, this different tools, so I've got a few posts kicking about in horribly half-written states, but we'll get to it eventually. Anyway. Is that a reasonable point to wrap it up for
that
tonight?
Seems like a reasonable point,
yeah.
I think, yes.
That tools affect the story, and maybe if the story is the important thing, we should be free to pick the tools we like, and we could go off onto other things, and we probably will next week.
Is education just storytelling? But let's not go there.
Yeah.
And now we're being asked to tell the same story over and over and over again.
Quite often, I suppose. Yeah. But
when we're forced into the learning management system, I mean.
Yeah. Well, especially if it was. Anyway, we shall. I'm just going to breeze through iTunes and grab a bumper of some sort to play us out.
Let's promise our million listeners that we will get some of the new bumpers and music, etc., for next week. We'll do that for next week, so we'll get some new ones in.
So, we're going to turn our radios off at the same time as we turn our radios on.
Listen to the Masters Radio. In touch with God.
In touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
DS 106 Good Spell. Turn your radio on.
Well, with the advice to turn our radios on from Rochelle, I'm going to turn this radio off. Cheers, folks.